This is the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. I'm Paul Yeager. Glad to have you here. This week, we are going to give you a post-game analysis, a roundtable of a roundtable. Think of us going into the locker room for a discussion that we had on mental health. We did a 30-minute special that is available to all the stations that carry Market to Market. You can also go to our YouTube channel and watch it, or our website and watch the program when we talk with Angie Setzer. You know her from being on the show. Emily Kreckelberg, she was just on a podcast a couple of weeks ago about mental health. Adrienne DeSutter is a farmer and former counselor. She lives in Knox County, Illinois, near Woodhull. And Dr. Michael Roseman, he's a clinical psychologist and farmer. And if you're like, where have I heard that name? Well, he has been on Market to Market before in a couple of stories with Colleen Bradford Krantz. He has also been in the Farm Crisis documentary. So he has seen some things. The stories he could tell, we could probably just do a full 30 or 60 with him sometime. I asked him in the 30-minute TV show about some of the 80s comparisons, and we did get into that, into this discussion. So what I did is, as soon as we got done recording the TV segment, I pulled everybody and just kept them where they were, started rolling, and we kind of asked them what they didn't get a chance to say. And one of the intriguing things you're going to hear is how men are treating things and feeling specifically different now. That'll be something you want to hear. Listening is key. If you don't get anything else from us, this discussion, listening, caring, be a better person. We'll get into that as well. And we also discuss, have you ever talked to somebody after they quit farming, after they've had conversations? You know, life does go on. It just is a lot different. So, my guests to you, Angie Setzer, Emily Kreckelberg, Adrienne DeSutter, Michael Roseman, here on this edition of the M2M Podcast. Angie, I want to start with you because before we rolled, you, like always, hit something up on Twitter, and we didn't even get a chance to talk to you in the broadcast about the social media side of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that good or bad in all of this? I mean, because...
Yeah.
Because frankly, I've seen you get beat up and I've seen you get held up as a champion. And it's kind of tough. That's not even good for your own mental health sometimes.
Oh, I mean, for me, I'm a different sort of person. I think the importance in everything in life is having a self-reflective understanding of who you are. You know, there's certain people that they will compartmentalize or continue, they'll like store away negative comments. And they'll continue to eat at them, and it just is not beneficial to them in any way, shape, or form. And those types of folks will struggle with the types of interactions I can sometimes have. Like, believe me, there's times though where I'm still having that like social media argument in the shower the next day. But I saw something the other day that was really kind of interesting, or it really made a lot of sense. Like, social media is, you know, you get out of it what you want to get out of it. If you want to go in and you know, find enemies and not find commonalities amongst other people and just spend all day kind of butting heads, that's what you can do. For me, Twitter, especially, and for a lot of folks that because I asked that today, I said, what is your take on social media? Is it good? Is it bad? And everyone really just kind of said, it's good and bad. And it's a lot of what you put into it, you're going to get out of it. And the level of importance you put on it is what you are going to kind of derive from it. And so, you know, for me, like, we've created this virtual peer group that is this amazing mix of people from all over the country that we wouldn't have if it weren't for Twitter, that has taught me a lot of things, that has taught my growers a lot of things, that we've had these conversations. You know, I have of different folks that I've interacted with that I call friends now. You know, and Carl, my husband, will be like, now who's that? Oh, it's at, you know, Crush, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, what's their name?
I don't know.
Yeah, but we interact like we're bestest friends, you know, and so that sometimes that's hard for him to understand. But, you know, I've created some long lasting, very solid friendships and networks. And I think that's one of the things that I would say from social media is that you really, you know, if you want to get on there and find people that you can connect with and have conversations with that are beneficial to you, you can.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the important thing, is not to get bogged down in the weeds, and remember that whole, you know, never wrestle with a pig, you both get dirty and the pig likes it, because there are people on social media that are just there to anonymously poke at people because they get enjoyment out of it. And so, you know, that's the thing where you understand how to use the mute button. If you can't close them off, you know, if it gets worse, there have been some people that have been relentless in unnecessary statements that they do get blocked. I'm sorry. I try to keep it, the interaction, completely open, but for my mental health too, I know when I need to shut it down and
you
walk away.
You can do it and walk away. All right, Mike, I didn't get a chance to ask you, what did we not talk about? And I know there was one thing you wanted to talk about specifically here. You've been on, you've done network news interviews all over the world over the years. People are still calling you. Does that concern you that the national press is picking up on the stress? Or do you see that as a helpful situation right now?
It's a helpful situation to have much attention by the media on the current era of COVID, and I guess I would say our current farm crisis. One of the things that I would have liked to have said earlier, but I'll say it now, is that we have changed from the 1980s and prior eras in that we have become much more social, even more physical. Men give each other man hugs. Family members give one another a hug and spend time together. Now we're in a novel situation where we can't maintain that kind of physical contact because we have to have physical distancing. But as Angie is saying, and what we have discussed here earlier, is that thanks to the modern technology, we can continue in slightly altered forms how we can share ideas, love, feelings, dilemmas, solutions. So fortunately, the technical advances allow us to still demonstrate and undertake those social interactions.
All right, Emily, what did you want to say that I unfortunately had to cut you off, or you want to say again?
Oh, where do I begin?
I get that a lot. It's all right.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing, and I already said it, and I just like to reiterate it, is how important sharing stories is. And I understand that, you know, for each people, their journey with their mental health and their journey with mental illness, if they do have it, is very personal. And in some cases, something they want to keep private. And I have just found that for me, sharing about it has kind of been, it has been therapeutic and an important part of my therapy, to share and to help to educate others. And so I just really encourage people that if maybe you are not somebody that's comfortable sharing your story, how can you help lift up those people that are comfortable with it? For example, for May, you know, Mental Health Awareness Month, I've been sharing some posts on social media where I write a question on a pink post-it, take a selfie with it, and then answer that question. And a lot of them are related to my specific diagnoses and some really common questions around mental health. And the amount of people that are sharing those then with their networks. And so I'm more than happy. And I tell people that when I present too, I'm like, you can share my story with other people. You can tell them what I've been through. That's fine. Because the more we realize that this is something that affects a lot of people, you know, what do they say? 1 in 5 people every year. You know, and so that's a big number. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's for me, just the big thing of share those stories. And if it's your own, kudos to you. I know firsthand how much courage it takes to be vulnerable, but know that it really does have an impact. There is no better feeling for me than when I get a message from somebody who is just saying, thank you so much. It really means more than you know. Like that, you know, can't get better than that.
All right, time for me to admit a little something here. Adrian and Angie, you know I flat out stole this idea from you, right?
No. Like I said before, like you can't steal something you're being given.
Yeah, so let me explain that a little bit. So Angie put it out, and I was tasked to do a story about this as part of a role here, a producer on the show. And I saw who came out. That's how I was able to talk to Emily. And Adrian, you and Angie are going to combine here on Wednesday, May, give me the right date, 20th. Adrian, what are you doing? What's this event you're going to do?
Oh, it is so cool because when we were talking about connecting and meeting farmers where they're at, I mean, that's what we're doing right now. This is Angie put out a cry for what can I be doing? What can we be doing? And so we've just kind of connected via social media. Again, thank you, Twitter. And we've got a nice panel of including Emily and some other experts, you could say. We've got also some farmers on this panel as well that we're going to be talking to very similarly to how we did today. But I think our goal really is to just kind of keep it real and be transparent, because as Emily is saying, that's how we break things down. And that's how we meet farmers who are tough and farmers who are a little resistant to have these conversations. You know, if we can just be honest, then I think that makes it a little easier to hear, a little easier to talk about. And let's be real, mental health is not just about mental illness. And I want to make that very clear, because that's something that when we talk about mental health in agriculture, people think, well, I don't have depression, or I don't have anxiety, or I'm not suicidal, so that's not an article for me, or that's not a topic for me. And that's so far from true. Mental health is about anyone's stress. I mean, we're all dealing with stress in some way. Many farmers are fabulous at managing it. They've figured it out. Many farmers are not, you know, to be quite frank. And so we all need to kind of figure out how to maintain our own levels of stress, and not just for ourselves, but for our farm and for our farm families as well. So This is definitely a conversation we can all be a part of.
Angie, I think you had told me that one of the people you were at least trying to get on in your town hall was somebody who said, I'm done. I gave up farming and moved off. Were you able to get that person onto the program? Yeah. So how it is okay to walk away from farming.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the conversation we want to have, because I think there are a lot of people right now, I keep saying decision fatigue. And so there are a lot of people that are really kind of facing where they've had to continuously make these really tough decisions. And right now they're facing probably one of the toughest. And so on the panel itself, we have, you know, three or four different farmers, all with varying backgrounds. But we also have a group of farmers that have come together, because I had this overwhelming response. So that was what was the greatest thing about this, is that I put that out there and I had 30 farmers reach out and say, what can I do to share my story? What can I do to interact with this? What can I do to help? And so we have a group of farmers as well that we've kind of put together their story in quick, concise little 3 to 5 minute interviews that we're also throwing together. And then we're going to follow up with a larger video, you know, just kind of a compilation of what these stories are and what this background is. But yeah, I mean, we've got a couple different folks that, you know, now we have one that is not shy about the fact that he had to file bankruptcy, you know, and he's holding on to the pieces that he has and was able to hold on to. And, you know, and we have another gentleman that he did not. He made the decision prior to reaching that point. He is now in agribusiness and he's, you know, happy to share. And then we have a whole other gamut of you know, farmers that are coming on to share where they're at. Some that are seeking out and are actively meeting with a therapist once or twice a week. Others that have you know, figured out the medication component that helps them feel more balanced in their thinking. And so, you know, my main point in all of this was I want everyone to be able to come together, obviously. Those that are aware of what they need to do to cope and make proper decisions and balance their mental stress load. But I also really want to reach out and, you know, and as we were saying before, you know, this conversation is not just about mental illness. It's about reaching out and seeing, you know, getting into contact with some of these folks that maybe that's just how they've always seen it. Maybe their dad was always really short and closed off and stoic and unable to really kind of embrace his emotions. Maybe their mom was. I mean, we have all kinds of different styles of people, you know, that we run into. And so they think that that's what they need to do. Or maybe we have a spouse on the farm that's what they're familiar with from their parents. So that's what they accept from their spouse. They don't ask them to open up or share because they don't think that that's how it's supposed to be. So I really want the conversation that we're going to have, you know, next week be one of all encompassing, you know, and really kind of let it be known that we all are struggling and it's okay not to be okay right now.
So do you have a time limit? Are you only 26 minutes and 47 seconds, unfortunately?
We're shooting for an hour. Okay. On.
Good luck. Good luck to that. And getting it all down in an hour. Like I had to squeeze this into two things. And that's the thing about this show. I mean, Angie, you know, when you come onto the show, you get 10 minutes. And you're like, are you kidding me? I could talk 10 minutes on just the wheat market. Okay. You know, you have to unfortunately combine things. Mike, I want to ask you a little bit of a follow-up to kind of what Angie was talking about. The question of, you don't necessarily see people face-to-face. You might have a phone conversation with them. But if you were, if you know who it is, I know there's confidentiality, things like that. But do you ever see someone that you may have talked to and they made a decision, not necessarily saying you helped them make that decision, but they came to a decision. Maybe they did get out of farming. Did you ever re-engage in a conversation with them, and did they say, thank you, or it was a major mistake I wish I never would have listened to? I mean, how does life after? I mean, we never hear about the life after. Do you have any conversations like that?
We do have those conversations, too. There is no choice. The decision is made for us. So it's necessary to realize that when we leave the farm operation, it's kind of like a death of a family or a death in the family. And we go through some of these same stages that Kubler-Ross wrote about in her kind of important book called On Death and Dying. But the first stage is alarm. A second stage is growing worry, anticipation that things are going to get worse. We're certainly at that level now. A third stage is the actual decision, whether we go ahead with bankruptcy or get out of farming. That's when we are most vulnerable, and it's most necessary that we manage our mental health. Although all the way through, it's important that we manage our mental health. And I like what Angie is saying. Managing how we behave is one of the few factors over which we have control these days. We can't control the markets and the weather and COVID. The fourth stage is a growing sense of life can go on, and it often involves taking a new job or finding a way to combine interest in agriculture with a new position. The final stage is what I would call recovery, but we're never the same. We have changed to a significant degree, and that's important and beneficial because we have learned things. We've become thrifty. We don't go back to where we were, but we've developed scars over those emotional pains and psychological illnesses. I wanted to say just another word or two on how we can control our behaviors, because Angie, you're exactly right when you're saying that it's not just managing our mental health, it's managing our day-to-day existence. I like to call that we manage our behaviors. We know that we are vulnerable. We have to have plans, or we can have plans that help us. And as everybody in the panel was saying, bringing others into the scene for sources of expertise, farm business management, veterinary consultants, agronomists, behavioral health providers, medical doctors, pastors, whatever they may be. It's important to bring all these people into our own network of supports, because we do have control over those relationships, and we can carry out these kinds of support meetings through social media without compromising physical distance. So, yeah, that kind of sums up what I would like to say as a theme for this.
All right. All right, Emily, we had a question that did come in. And this one, and actually, Adrian, either of you could answer this one, I guess. The support role. Now, Adrian, I know you're gonna say I'm not involved day to day operation. I'm not out there running, but you are in a support role. And Emily, you know what it was like. How important of that support role. I guess you can both answer this one. It seems that you're always walking on eggshells. How do you best play a supporting role in your operation? Emily, okay, go ahead. Adrian first.
I know that's something I have learned. I think I'm in a unique position because I didn't grow up on a farm. And so when I came into this industry and into the relationship I have with my husband, you know, I had expectations and limitations and things based on, you know, not knowing anything about agriculture, not knowing what all these stressors were about. And so I think that has been helpful in a sense that, you know, I'm only going to put up with what I think is fair, you know, and I'm not going to rely on, you know, well, just because mom and dad did it this way or grandma and grandpa did it this way, that's how I'm going to be accepting. That's not how our relationship works. That being said, it also is a downfall because we sometimes have that conversation of, well, you know, when it's harvest, you're just going to have to watch the kids the whole time, basically, you know, and that is something that I have had to learn and had to learn how to balance all that. But I think someone in a supporting role, whether it's spouse, siblings, children, whatever, the biggest lesson I have learned is, again, things, we don't have to be the fixers. And that is what we sometimes jump into. We sometimes feel like we have to nurture. We have to, when a husband, for example, comes home with an issue, we have to say, well, how can we fix this? What do we do? And live it with them. And something that I have learned is that sometimes the fixing is just by sitting back and listening. Again, we've talked about the importance of listening and empathy, and that is something for me that I've definitely have noticed has made a drastic difference in our farm family. Is just when my husband calls me with something, just last week, we had a 90% chance of rain all week long, and there's the day and we don't get any rain, and he called me and he was so frustrated at the weatherman, you know. And in the past I would have said, well, you know, you can't always rely on that, and you know, I would have said things that I would have thought at the time were helpful, but they just aren't sometimes. And so instead I used listening. I let him vent. I said to him, I'm really sorry. I know this sucks. I know this kind of throws off your schedule. You know, we'll make do, we'll figure things out. And in doing that, that conversation ended in him cracking a joke and saying, all right, no big deal. Talk to you later. You know, we didn't have to do any fixing. We just had to listen, show that empathy, show that patience. But I know that it's difficult to do that sometimes. And it starts with making sure that you're taking care of, even as the supporter, taking care of your own mental health, having your own limitations and boundaries, and doing what you need to stay well, again, for your farm family.
All right, Emily, you get to answer that if you want, but I also want to ask you, maybe not the farm supporting role that Adrian's talking about. What about that I'm in town of a rural community of less than 2,000 people, and I see a farmer or a farm family? What is something I can do to assist? I'm not going to go, maybe they don't want me picking up rock or running a tractor, trust me, but maybe a simple thanks, a surprise meal that you take out to somebody sometime, an organization. What is something I can do in the community?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And first I want to just go back and add a little bit to Adrian's answer to that question and what she was really getting at. Which I think is key even for, you know, community members, any sort of support role, it comes down to communication. and we communicate in a lot of different ways. The obvious one is talking. Mm-hmm. One that I think is more important that Adrienne said repeatedly, listening is a really key way to communicate. And then I think that, yeah, we can communicate through our actions as well. And so when I think of people wanting to feel support, you know, yeah, it can be, because we've been talking about this, especially with COVID, in our work with the Rural Stress Task Force in Minnesota, encouraging people, how can you check in on your neighbor? And it can be a thing where, yeah, you know, leave a dinner at their doorstep, something that one of our 4-H programs did in one of our counties was every club had the youth write a thank you card to farmers. And then they just randomly sent them out to farmers in the county. And I mean, these cards were adorable, you know, hand-drawn sheep and tractors and the whole nine yards. And they received really great feedback from that, right? A simple thank you can go such a long way. And so just those little things like that, those little community things. And, you know, we see right now different signs out and thank you frontline workers and thank you farmers and the videos people are making. You know, those things do get seen. They do get noticed. And I just try to remind people of that, but it's like, it's not necessarily in farmers' nature to, you know, say, oh, thank you so much for doing that. Or, hey, I see you, like, I really appreciate this. But they do notice it. And I know that it does really mean a lot to them. And so those are things that we can do. And I think too, I'm thinking about if you are in a rural neighborhood or a neighborhood where there's farms in that, making a system for checking on each other. I know our State Farm Bureau president, he talks about they have this signal where if a red kitchen towel is like hanging up that you can see it through the kitchen window, that means like things aren't good, like check on me, I'm stressed, I'm whatever. I've also heard that people, yeah, they'll leave their barn light on if they want a neighbor to come check on them, you know. So things like that too, is how can we just enhance the sense of community? And it's something that we can do even now when we, you know, physically can't be together, you know, and are dealing with increased isolation, increased stress across the board for everybody. Just these little things that we can do that really increase our social connectedness and our sense of belonging.
Angie, we just got to be better people, right?
Yeah.
Just be nice to one another.
I mean, I think that, I know that sounds really simple, right? Like, oh, I just have to be a better person. Okay, I'll write that down for tomorrow. But the reality is, like, you just have to go. It's very easy. And I'm one of those people, I'm super dry, maybe super sarcastic. And I can say things that I have no intent of them being ill-received, but they can be. And so I have to try to remember sometimes, okay, this isn't the time or the place for this comment. And then I feel like I'm being a better person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple, but really
it is. It
the
is.
Reality is, like, you just, it's the golden rule, right? You want to treat everyone like you want to be treated. If you wouldn't want someone to speak to you or your spouse or your child or your mother or father or whatever in that way, or treat them in that way, don't do that to them. And it's, you know, and so I'm far from perfect. I'm exceptionally imperfect in a lot of that, but I really try to make sure I'm constantly checking myself to be a positive person, to try to, you know, kind of, because positivity begets positivity. And it's so important in our day-to-day existence to be surrounded by positive people.
Well, I was glad to be around four positive people for this discussion. That's Angie Setzer. My thanks to Emily Krekelberg and Adrienne DeSutter and Michael Roseman. Thank you to the four of you for putting up with all of these crazy television and audio. And thanks for doing this post-game and the full program. It was all very nice to meet you and interact with you. And maybe we'll reconvene this and see if we've actually been nicer to one another.
Is Angie a better person?
Yes. It's all we got to do. Just make Angie better. All right. Thank you all for sitting with us. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks to our panelists. And again, you can watch that episode, watch what they talked about, as we referred to a broadcast portion. That's on our YouTube channel or on our webpage of markettomarket.org. You can search for us on YouTube at Market to Market. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for listening.